genitor de entithymerae sicanae sixaeoth in dogma paras caesaras augustu. Huh? What do you think? This is Greek? You're right. It's Greek. It is the original of the story of Jesus' birth in Greek. Now, if you're like most people, the story didn't make a whole lot of sense. But if you have a copy of the Bible, pick it up and look at the book. Is this the story? It's a recording of the story. But as long as the story stays on the page, it'll never be a story that is shared between people. The goal of this tape is to enable you to get the stories out of their original language, out of Greek, into a living story that you can share and tell to another person. I'm Tom Boomershine, and my commitment is to enable you in working with this tape to become a biblical storyteller, someone who can tell the stories of Jesus in a way that grows out of your own experience and that connects directly with the experience of others, and that maintains a high degree of continuity and faithfulness to the biblical tradition. Now, working with a tape is a little unnatural, and at times it would be clearly better if we could be face-to-face, but we can't. And there are also values to working on this on a tape. And so I'm going to ask you at many points to turn off the tape and do things to work with this as a way by which you can become a storyteller. I'd like to tell you some stories and work with you in the process of learning this art of biblical storytelling. I began work on the gospel as storytelling as an inner city pastor in Chicago, when I was looking for a common language that could bind together persons who came out of the black community and out of the white community in this country. And I went back to Union and did a PhD in New Testament, studying the original form of the gospel as storytelling. My dissertation was called Mark the Storyteller, and I started telling stories around New York. But in 1974, I had an accident. I pulled into a gas station on the Bronx River Parkway and was standing in back of a car. Another car came off the parkway and couldn't stop. One minute I was on my way to teach. The next minute I was flat on my back. Both of my legs were fractured. I was told the next morning when I woke up from surgery, I was going to be out of circulation for a year and that I might never walk again. During the months of recovery from that accident, I found that the stories that I had learned were literally the sources of life for me. I learned the story of Jesus' birth, the story of the healing of the paralytic, the story of Jesus' death, the story of Jesus walking on the water, of the resurrection, as stories that literally enabled me to walk again. I learned out of that experience that there's a big difference between when you have the stories on the page and when the stories are in your heart, when they are inside, so that they come not off the page, but out of an internal experience. And so the first place to start with the stories is to get them off the page and into yourself, to learn the story, to make it your own. And that's where we want to start. If at all possible, it would be great if you could get another person with whom you could work with this tape. Now, the first step in learning a story is simply to begin to tell it. And what I'd like is for you to tell the story back to me as I tell it to you, phrase by phrase. It's really easy to do, and it's no big deal, so just say it back to me. This is the most ancient method of education. We're going to start with Luke's birth narrative. Don't look at it. Say it to me. In those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus. that all the world should be enrolled. This was the first enrollment when Quirinius was governor of Syria. And everyone went to be enrolled, each to his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, from the city of Nazareth, to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be enrolled with Mary, his betrothed, who was with child. And while they were there, the time came for her to be delivered. And she gave birth to her firstborn son. And she wrapped him in swaddling cloths and laid him in a manger, because there was no place for them in the inn. There we are, the first time through the story. We're only going to do the first third of the birth narrative, and you can do this same process with the rest of it in relation to your own work on the tape. But what I'd suggest is that you tell the story back and forth. One of the things that's important about learning a story is not to focus on the individual words, but to focus, first of all, on the structure of the story. And it might be helpful to even do your own analysis, that is, to identify the structure and write it out on a piece of paper. There are several ways to do that. One is simply to identify key words at the beginning and ends of sentences. Another is to simply identify the most important words in each sentence. Or it may help to give a title to the episodes and to the sentences of each episode. However you do it, identify the structure. First, two basic principles about biblical narrative that you need to recognize. The first is what amounts to still a Boomershein hypothesis about the literary units of the stories. An episode is a unit of two, three, or four sentences, and the hypothesis is that biblical narratives were written in those literary units, that is, in units of two, three, or four sentences. Now notice that the birth narrative has episodes that have three sentences. The first episode is about the decree. The second episode is about Jesus' birth. The third is the announcement of the angel. The fourth is the shepherds going and finding the baby. And the fifth is the responses. So the birth narrative is a clear instance of the episodic structure of biblical stories. We're going to learn the first two episodes. And so identify the structure. The first is about the decree. And the second is Jesus' birth. The first sentence of the first episode is the decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be enrolled. Second, this was the first enrollment. Third, all went to be enrolled. So the key word that ties together that first episode is enrolled, enrollment. And it's repeated in each of the sentences. That verbal thread is another way of linking the story together. If you identify those key words, the structure, then all you have to do is think the structure, and the words will just be there. In the second episode, the first sentence deals with the trip up to Bethlehem. The second, with Jesus' birth, and the third, with his being wrapped and laid in a manger. Now, the most difficult sentence in this whole story is the sentence of Joseph going up from Galilee. And look at the structure of the sentence. Again, pay attention to the structure. Joseph went up from Galilee, from the city of Nazareth. So that's all part of one link. to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was the house and the lineage of David. That's all about Bethlehem. And in each instance, the structure begins with the region, Galilee, and then the city, Nazareth. Judea, Bethlehem. And then after all of that introduction, it is simply to be enrolled with Mary, his betrothed, who was with child. So it's linked with the enrollment, which is the subject of the first episode. So that's another principle, is that things are linked in biblical stories by putting one thing next to the other. So you remember one, and then you make the connection with the one that went before, the one that follows, and that's the way you remember. Take 5 minutes or so to identify for yourself the structure of those first two episodes. Just write it out on a piece of paper or in any way that you is helpful to you. Another way that some people find helpful to identify the structure is to make cartoons. So you might want to draw pictures or symbols of that. Whatever's helpful to you, do it right now. Turn off the tape now and identify the structure. Now we're going to go through the story again. And it's easiest to remember the words of the story if you chunk them together. You remember in Mary Poppins the word supercalifragilisticexpialidocious? So also, in those days a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be enrolled. If you think of that as one word, then it is easier to remember. Chunk the words into sense units and learn them as one word. I'll tell you the story. You can say it along with me in the groups of words. Now, the goal of the telling is simply to get through it. You want to get through from beginning to end without adding anything of any major significance and without leaving out anything of major significance. But just get through it. And if you get lost along the way, your partner can help you. Partner, if you've got a copy of the story, don't look at it. Simply remember it together, and if your partner forgets, remind your partner, and if neither one of you can remember, then look at it and help each other with the story. Okay, let's go through it and just say it together. In those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be enrolled. This was the first enrollment when Quirinius was governor of Syria. And all went to be enrolled, each to his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, from the city of Nazareth, to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be enrolled with Mary, his betrothed, who was with child. And while they were there, the time came for her to be delivered, and she gave birth to her firstborn son. And she wrapped him in swaddling cloths and laid him in a manger, because there was no place for them in the inn. Tell it to your partner. And both of you tell it back and forth for maybe, 5 or 10 minutes. Try to do it 2 or 3 times. Identify any places where you have problems. And don't turn on the tape until both of you can make it all the way from beginning to end of this part of the story. All right, turn off the tape. Well, how did it go? If your experience is like most people's, it was easier than you thought it was going to be. On the other hand, it was a little difficult, and you'll want to do it some more. And the sooner you do it, the better. Biblical stories were told first many, many centuries ago. And the storytellers in the ancient world told their stories in ways that are very different than the way in which we tell stories now. The first step in telling biblical stories is to understand what the story meant in its original context and to find a way to experience how the story sounded in its original context. Now, the story was originally told in Greek. We're not going to try to learn it in Greek. Though, if you decide at some point that you want to do that, it's just fine and it's a fun thing to do. But what we can do is to re-experience now dimensions of what the story meant, of how the story sounded when it was originally told. Now, in the birth narrative, there are several things that are important characteristics of the story in its original context that often are not present in contemporary tellings. For example, the first sentence of the story is that in those days a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be enrolled. And when this is read on television and in most Christmas pageants, Caesar Augustus is very close in the associations of the storytelling to Santa Claus. You know, our old buddy, Caesar Augustus. A decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be enrolled. It's as if this was the nicest thing that ever happened. In fact, in its original context, the enrollment under Caesar Augustus was hated by the Jews. The reason for the enrollment was to require people to sign up to pay taxes. And at the time of the enrollment, as far as the historical evidence is that we have, there was a major revolt led by Judas the Galilean to try to sabotage the enrollment. And so in this first episode, then, one needs to communicate the sense of oppression that was a dominant part of how this story was experienced in its original context. In the second part of the story, in the story of Jesus' birth, again, the story is usually told in a somewhat romantic way. It's as if Jesus being born in Bethlehem and laid in a manger is somehow almost romantic. Sweet. That was not the way in which the story was originally told at all. Rather, it was that Jesus was born in the context of his mother and his father being in the extremely embarrassing position of going up to Joseph's hometown and, as a couple who were not married, having the baby in Joseph's hometown. To say that while they were there, the time came for her to be delivered was not good news for Mary at all. And the implication is that in addition to the embarrassment, that it was for the baby very uncomfortable to be laid in a feeding trough for animals. Now the question in telling the story is, how is that to be conveyed? How can one communicate that dimension, those dimensions of the meaning of the story in its original context in our telling now? There are two things that I'd like for you to do in your work on the story right now. If you have a copy of the book, Story Journey, then I'd suggest that you read the sections of commentary on this story and the analysis of its dimensions of its meaning in its original context. If not, work on it for yourself and explore how did the story sound when it was originally told. What was the attitude of the storyteller toward these events? And try various ways of doing that. Turn off the tape. A gift of NA storytelling is that you make the story your own because of the distinctive ways that it connects with your experience. And in this story, there are really two kinds of experiences that are identified. The first is the experience of oppression, of being required by somebody to do something that you don't want to do. The second is an experience of love and tenderness in the context of very difficult circumstances. Now, a way of exploring the story and its connections is to explore then your experiences of things like that. So, what is a time in your life when you have experienced oppression, being required to do something that you didn't want to do? It might have been in an educational situation, it might have been as a child, it might have been in relation to work, whatever it is, what is the most oppressive thing that you can remember, and tell that story as a point of connection with the story. And then use that energy, that place, that experience as a way of telling them the story of Jesus' birth. Also, when is the time when you have most experienced love and tenderness in a context that was, let's say, uncomfortable? And the suggestion that I'd make is that you first of all tell your own story and then tell the story of Jesus. Okay, stop the tape and explore your connections. Final stage in working on a story is to tell it. And to allow the story to have its own life in relation to the persons to whom you want to tell the story. Telling the story is exploring the ways in which it may resonate with and connect with other people, and be a way by which they can experience and hear and know in a new way the love of God that is present in the story. Telling the story is a way of listening, a way of listening to the vibrations that come back from the story as it is told to another person. And as you tell the story, you will sense that, how it connects for another person. But it's especially helpful if you know what is the context in which the story is being heard. And there are two possible ways of doing that. If you have a partner, what I would suggest is that you share with each other, where now do you feel most alone? Overwhelmed by things beyond your control. If my partner has shared that with me, then I'll tell the story in relation to that. If you don't have a partner, then identify that for yourself and tell yourself the story in relation to that situation in your own life. For now, as a way of concluding our work on this story, I'd like for you to identify the situation in your own life now that is like that, but also I'll tell you mine. Right now, I'm at a point in which I have a lot of projects going, and my office at home is piled with multiple piles of projects that have been completed but have not yet been filed, and of other things that need to be done, each of which is a demand, each of which is, when I walk into the office, like a whole series of requirements of things that I need to do, but there isn't time to get them all done. There is a way in which that situation is, for me, right now, oppressive. And walking into the office is an experience of being overwhelmed, oppressed by all those things that I am required to do. When you tell the story, then, listen to it in relation to that present experience. And what I'm going to do when I go home is to go into my office and tell myself this story of Jesus' birth, and to be there, to let that experience be the context in which I will approach my office. As a way of receiving a gift and of concluding our work on this story, turn off the tape and tell the story. This is session two of our story journey. The goal of this story journey is that you become a storyteller. I think probably my favorite thing in the world is to enable people to discover their own abilities as a storyteller. I love teaching storytelling because everyone is different. I wish that I could hear what you are doing with the stories as you tell them. And as I am doing this tape, I am thinking about and am present with you as you are seeking to do that. And I know that what will happen is that as you explore the stories, you will find your own style. I've taught these stories to thousands of people. And every one of them is different. Everyone who says the same words, when they have lived into the story and made it their own, it's a different story. And so the goal is both to interiorize the story, that is to get it inside, but also is to find the storyteller in there. Reminds me of a story of two boys. One was always depressed. The other one was always happy. And the parents said, they're not going to be like this always. We've got to do it. We'll give them a test and see if we can change that. And so they put the boy who was always depressed in a room full of brand new toys, and they put the one who was always happy in a room full of manure. And they left them there for several hours, and they went in, and they found the boy in the room of new toys sitting there crying. And they said to him, why are you crying? He said, well, these are such beautiful toys, and if I break one, it'll just be awful. And they went into the room with the boy in the manure, and he was just digging away and had this smile on his face and was just as happy as a jaybird. And they said, why are you so happy? He said, there's got to be a pony in there somewhere. Well, there's got to be a storyteller in there somewhere, and that's what we're after. We're going to work on the story of the healing of the paralytic. This story is a story about the transformation of a person's life, but also the change in perception of the character of Jesus. What I would suggest is that you use the book, Story Journey, as your reference point in relation to the episodes. These tapes are connected with Story Journey. And in the book, there's a lot of information about the episodes, about the character of the story, that there's no point in my going over here on the tape. And so I'd suggest that you get the book and read through that section in relation to the episodes. But there are things that I can do here with the tape that can't communicate in the book. For example, the tough sentence in this story is a sentence with two parts. It is Jesus, in the middle of his speech, saying, but that you may know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins, then he said to the paralytic, I say to you, rise, take up your pallet, and go home. Now that sentence is a hard sentence because it is complex, and so you need to think about it as two parts. The first part that ends his speech to the scribes, and then he said to the paralytic, and then he talks to the paralytic. Now, in remembering that, what you can think of is that the first part is directed to the scribes, and the second part is directed to the paralyzed man. And see in your mind's eye. And that will help you to remember the story. In each instance, what you want to do is to recreate the scene in your imagination. The scene of the crowd, the scene of the group bringing the paralytic and letting him down through the roof, the scribes, Jesus' response, and then the man getting up and walking, and the crowd. If you see each of those scenes and recreate them in your imagination, then you'll remember the story and be able to tell it. Now, analyze the structure, go over it, tell it to each other, and work on the story until you can make it through from beginning to end. I'd say take 10 or 15 minutes, get the story together, and when you're finished, then turn the tape back on and we'll continue. The next part of growing the story is to listen to it in its original context. Again, in the book, I have outlined an exegetical analysis of this story, the history of its tradition in its original context, and I'd suggest you read that. Our problem in listening to the story in its original context is that we tend to hear it in the way in which we've heard it read. And in the reading of Scripture, in contemporary church experience, the reading of the Scriptures has become a very monotone, a very objective experience of these stories. The problem is that we tend to hear it that way. Therefore, the freedom to tell the story in the way in which it was originally told is very difficult. Now, one of the things that we know from the ancient world and from the study of storytelling in general is, for example, that people use their hands. You tie a storyteller's hands, they can't tell the story. The reason for that is that a lot of the memory in the story is tied to the gestures. So when you're telling the story, it is fully appropriate in relation to listening to how it was originally told, to listen for the gestures of the original storytellers. They would have great variations in volume, in tempo, chant the stories. It's highly expressive and very spontaneous. Lots of response from the listeners. That's simply characteristic of storytelling experience. Now, in this story, one of the questions is, then, how big a deal do you make of the roof? My conclusion is that Mark clearly makes a great big deal of the roof. And so, in listening to how Mark originally told it, I think it's very difficult to overdo the roof. In that, I would suggest that you explore ways of heightening the impact of when they couldn't get near him because of the crowd, they went up and they tore a hole in the roof. Now, the question is, how do you make that a big deal so that the shock of that, somebody tearing a hole in the roof and coming down through the roof, comes through in your telling of the story? The most difficult aspect of telling this story is the attitude of the storyteller toward the scribes. In general, when this story is told, the attitude toward the scribes is very negative. Now, there were some scribes who were sitting there questioning within themselves, who is this man to talk like this? You hear the attitude? Now, the question is whether or not that was the attitude of the original storyteller. And I think the probability is that it was not. That rather, these questions were questions that the listeners had, and that Mark put those questions in the mouths of the authorities of the people of Israel, namely the scribes. Another issue is then to find a way for yourself of conveying their questions as real questions that Jesus responds to in a sympathetic manner. Nevertheless, there is conflict, but it is a conflict in which there is a degree of mutual engagement and respect rather than disdain, hostility on the part of the storyteller toward the scribes and then of Jesus toward the scribes. So what I would suggest then is that you work on telling the story in order to convey how it sounded when it was originally told and explore Mark's attitude as a storyteller, the attitude of Jesus toward the scribes and toward the paralyzed man, and tell the story, listen to the story in its original context as a story that Mark and pre-Mark and storytellers told. Tell it to each other or to yourself in its original context, seeking to hear it as Mark told it. Turn off the tape. Now we want to explore our connections with the story. There is no sense in being indirect about the sources of connections. In acting, the Stanislavski method is that you explore the connections between a character's experience and your own experience. By finding those connections, you can find a way to make the characters alive. Now, what's different about storytelling is that you have to connect with all the characters. You, as a storyteller, are presenting all the story, all the characters, and first and foremost, yourself. Storytelling is a relationship between a storyteller and listeners. Well, first of all, you have to find out who you are. But then you also need to find ways to make the characters of the story distinctive and alive in their own way by presenting their words in a distinctive way. How do you do that? Well, what I would suggest is that the way to do it is to explore the connections of your own experience with the dynamics of what is going on in each of the episodes. Let's go through the story episode by episode. The first one is the crowd. When have you experienced a big crowd, highly enthusiastic, like a rock concert or a big revival or some major event where people were just packing into the house? And what you want to do is to identify, how did you tell about that when you came home? When you experienced something like that, how did you convey the excitement and the enthusiasm that was present in that big group packing into the house, and your sense of wonder and amazement? All these people just crowding in there. And what was happening? Now, that's the attitude that can then give vitality to that episode. In the episode of the paralytic, there's first of all conveying the incredible character of that they tore a hole in the roof. But equally important is then Jesus' love, Jesus' response to the paralytic when he let him down through the roof and he looked over and he saw this man. And when he saw, through his eyes, when he saw their faith, he said to the paralytic, "My child, your sins are forgiven." What was that like? When have you said something that was intended to change the way a person felt about themselves? When you were using words to do something, to convey love, concern, forgiveness. That's what Jesus was doing. If you can identify a time in your own experience when you did that, then you'll have a sense of what that's about. I remember when Jean and I were married, I remember saying to her, "I take you, Jean, to be my wife." That was using language, those words, to do something. That's what Jesus was doing in relation to the paralytic. When have you done that? In relation to the rest of the story, then explore the connections. When have you been sitting and listening to someone and feeling really skeptical and thinking, "This guy is a kook," and asking questions or talking with a friend who is next to you and saying, "Oh, this is a bunch of baloney," or whatever else you might have thought of to say? In terms of Jesus' response, when have you known that someone was skeptical of you or critical of you, and that you were trying to do something that was really good, and they were cutting that off and being somewhat impatient, but also asking, "Why? Why? Why are you questioning like this?" It might be in relation to children. It might be in relation to parents. It might be in relation to a friend. Why are you doing this? If you can explore those connections, then you'll find a way to tell the story. Now, what I'd suggest is then that you go through the story episode by episode and identify those aspects of your own experience. Tell about that. Tell it out loud to yourself or to your partner, and then tell the episode of the story and see to what degree you can convey that connection. Connections between your own experience and this story, both of you back and forth, and work through internalizing this story by connecting it with your own experience. And after you've done that, then turn on the tape and we'll continue. How are you doing? I can hear in my imagination that there is a real energy being generated by your telling of the story. My experience has been that in workshops like this, that what happens is that the story just kind of gradually unfolds. And it's amazing what happens as you begin to connect these stories with your own experience, but also to find out how different they sound in their original context, and what you learn about what the story meant through this process of living with the story, telling it, letting these words become words that are full of meaning. One way of thinking of a story is that it's like a vase, and that these words have been given, but that what you're doing is you're pouring meaning into those words so that these words grow and become words into which you can pour all of this experience, both of yourself and of God. And that what happens is that in the telling of the story and exploring those connections, that vase gets richer and richer, fuller and fuller, until it just begins to overflow. And that's where the story ends. That's where the story process ends, is that as you live into it and come to love it and be loved by it, that it just kind of overflows. And then to tell the story to someone else isn't an ordeal. It's not an obligation. It's something that simply flows out of having lived in, loved, and been loved by the story. This story has been for me, probably more than any other story, a source of life and healing for me after my accident. For a period of almost a year, I had to go through physical therapy. And this story became my story. I probably told myself this story 3,000-4,000 times. It became the framework within which I lived that experience.